from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, where the heck are all the humpies? And why are the ones being caught so freaking huge? Could it be climate change? We've got a story on ocean acidification, too. All that, and why can't fishermen sell their catch in Quinnahawk? Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com.
Salmon fishermen in the Kodiak management area are harvesting about 200,000 pink salmon a day, which, according to area management biologist James Jackson, is right down there among the slowest of pink salmon seasons.
We are having one of the poorest pink runs we've seen in a very long time. Usually by the beginning of August, we've harvested about 4 million pinks, and we're going to be, at the end of the day, maybe 1.5 million. So well behind what we usually are harvesting and escaping at this time of year.
So the question is, are the humpies late, or are they going to be a no-show?
Yeah, that's the trick, right? So it's kind of hard for me to, I'm hoping they're late, but at the same time, I can't bank on that. I have to kind of assume it's a weak run. I mean, my whole job is to ensure that we actually get the fish in the streams. So right now, it looks like it's really weak, and so we have to have longer closures. That's why the commercial fishery's been so restricted lately.
Jackson says the catch and the escapement is currently running about one-fourth the strength it should be at this time of the season.
There are some notable places that look really, really weak. Pink salmon escapement to Iakulik is the weakest it's ever been since we've had the weir there. Many of the west side streams were empty the last time we flew a survey. That's why we've had so many of the inner bays shut down. And then on top of that, we've had so many, closures. The east side's weak. The mainland's weak. Everything's weak right now.
Jackson said other areas of south central and southwest Alaska are also experiencing slow pink returns, but he also noted that the fish are coming back unusually large.
Yeah, I think the overall average right now is just, 4.5 pounds, but even that's really large. I mean, we've had reports of, on average 5-pound fish being delivered. We've had people bring into the office 10-pound pinks. I've had some pictures of some 14-pound pinks from tenders that they brought in, and usually that's an indication of no competition out in the ocean. So you don't have any competition, that usually means you have a weak run. That's why the pinks are probably so big. It's not always true, but big pinks.
He said most of the early sockeye runs were also fairly weak, but he said there's been a pickup in red catches lately, and the escapement on the Karluk, Iakulik, and the south end of Kodiak Island has picked up, but he attributed that to the greater number of closures than usual.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
In the Bering Sea village of Quinnahawk, a deal to sell salmon to the Seattle-based Northwest Seafood Exchange has died after the Coastal Villages Region Fund refused the village corporation manager access to the processing equipment. The fishermen in Quinnahawk join others in the region in having commercial fishing opportunities, but nowhere to sell their fish. This move by CVRF highlights a string of what many are calling poor management choices, and others are calling tactics by executives to line their own pockets rather than their communities. KYUK Public Radio in Bethel has been investigating, and Adrian Wagner has more.
Work, fish, hope. That's the motto of Coastal Villages Region Fund. But lately, the village of Quinnahawk hasn't been doing much working or fishing. And as of last week, a little less hoping.
And they're already at a poverty level, and they were getting desperate because there was no fish fire. And now they're, they're screwed.
That's Jason Lake, a broker working with the Northwest Seafood Exchange. Lake heard that CVRF had closed its $40 million processing plant in Platinum and saw this as a salmon buying opportunity. Lake told the owner of the company, Bob Links, about the deal.
I called Bob. I was like, hey, Bob, you interested? And he's like, heck yeah, let's go.
Quinnahock is on the Kinnicktock River, just up the Bering Sea coast from Platinum. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says that they would open a commercial salmon fishery there if there was a processor for that fish, which there isn't. The shutdown plant's owner, CVRF, is a 19-year-old firm granted a share of offshore crab and groundfish under the Federal Community Development Quota Program with the idea that income should be used to help the economy along the coast. CVRF CEO Morgan Crow says that their onshore plant was never profitable.
The conditions to open it will be that it has to be able to come very, very close to sustaining itself.
Crow says that the plant and the fishery operation on the whole were not businesses, but what he calls programs, meaning that they did not create revenue for CVRF. Jason Lake says he was willing to offer two times what Coastal Villages Region Fund paid for salmon. He says that the fish are easily worth that much. But before the deal could be struck, Lake ran into big problems.
We flew down there yesterday and we talked to a handful of fishermen.
That's Crow again, who just got back from Quinnahock.
I think they were interested in using some of our equipment, but I think in the end they had no idea what they were getting themselves into.
Not only do fishermen have no place to process the fish they catch, but Crow and plant manager Nick Souza have denied them access to equipment already in place in Quinnahock for icing and handling the fish. Here's Lake again.
You know, we were shut down, which in return shut Quinnahock's down for the year and all the other villages that participate in the commercial fishing in that area.
The closure of the commercial fisheries program by CVRF was a surprise to many residents in the region, who told Alaska Dispatch News earlier this year that CVRF didn't warn them about the closure, but the plant had already stopped taking halibut 2 years ago. Crow says unstable supply, state and federal fishing regulations are among the problems, but others believe that it was because the operation was badly run. Mayor of the city of Platinum, Mark Moyle, where the now closed plant is located, says that he's seen plenty.
And that's what you can quote me on, is that I believe they have foolishly spent money here in Platinum.
Moyle says he's seen the company spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in places it didn't have to. He says the company routinely barged its damaged boats and equipment to Washington instead of doing repairs in-house, which cost thousands in shipping alone, not to mention the work itself each time something broke. Moyle echoes what several other sources told KYUK. Here he recalls another instance he says didn't make financial sense.
In 2014, they had a barge that it serves as a dock, and they had a ship or a boat that was probably 120 feet long, and they needed to move them up onto the beach. And they contracted an outfit to come out here and do that. And they spent $750,000 to move those two pieces of equipment, you know, up onto the beach.
Here's Crow responding to that.
I'm running this operation. I want it run my way, and I'm going to continue to do that. And I support Nick Souza, absolutely.
Plant manager Nick Souza would have been directly in charge of these decisions.
I don't think some of the things you're tossing up are anywhere near the truth. I think that
that's what I'm wondering.
Every time you try to produce a product in Western Alaska, it's very expensive.
More than just the way the plant was run, Moyle points out the plant itself as a poor management choice. He says it was more than the area could support, that it was a Cadillac when all the area needed was a pickup truck, and now it sits unused. Crow says he doesn't disagree with the idea that the plant was too much for the area.
But I didn't understand, or I never projected this, number one, that increased subsistence pressure on local fish, especially king salmon. I've never seen swarms of boats that resemble the old commercial fleets that are now the subsistence fleets.
Crow says the last couple of years of sporadic fishing openers have driven people to overuse the resource and make the fisheries program impossible. Though this does not explain the ocean-going fishing programs that have been shut down as well. We'll have more on that next time. In Bethel, I'm Adrian Wagner.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is sponsored by United Fishermen of Alaska's Salmon Habitat Information Program, SHIP, a source of information for commercial fishermen on the health of salmon runs. Help steer the ship program by taking a quick online survey. The survey and more information is available at www.ufafish.org.
Climate change may get all the attention, but it has a less talked about but no less troubling twin, ocean acidification. And a growing chorus of Alaskans, from shellfish growers to fishermen, are fretting about the potential impacts in the state waters. Now a new collaboration is aiming to bring ocean acidification to the spotlight with the hope that better understanding will better prepare the state to adapt. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more.
Historically, oceans are basic. That means not acidic. But about a quarter of the carbon dioxide released each year into the atmosphere is absorbed by the world's oceans, and that changes the chemistry of the seawater, making the oceans more acidic. That in turn makes it harder for ocean dwellers like crab, oysters, clams, and plankton to form shells, seriously threatening those species. Darcy Dugan is coordinator of the brand new Alaska Ocean Acidification Network, whose goal is to educate Alaskans and connect scientists across the state. She says since the Industrial Revolution, there's been an estimated 30% increase in the acidity of the waters globally.
And if you assume a business as usual scenario for emissions, then we'd be looking at the oceans being about 150% more acidic in 2100. And that's also more acidic than they've been in the last 20 million years.
The rapid change may be outpacing sea creatures' ability to adapt, and Alaska is expected to experience acidification faster and more intensely than other global neighbors because the water here is, as scientists say, cold and old. That is, cold waters and waters from the deep sea are already more acidic.
These waters naturally store more CO2 year-round, which means we're closer to a dangerous threshold to begin with. And then as winter storms bring colder water and older water to the surface, then the state can intensify.
Alaska's Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort seas are all expected to move out of their historic range of variability. Dugan says the Beaufort Sea is expected to leave its natural range this decade. And that could affect Alaskans' way of life. That's because the species most affected by acidification, like plankton, supports the state's most important fish, like salmon.
Right now we have a $5.8 billion seafood industry, and the concern is it's not just commercial species that might be affected by ocean acidification, but the species that they eat. So once you kind of knock one part of the food chain, the whole food chain feels the effects.
Plus, she says about half the seafood in the U.S. comes from Alaskan waters. Dugan hopes that a better understanding of the chemistry and ecology will help the state respond to future changes. That's where the Alaska Ocean Acidification Network comes in. They are working to connect scientists and communities from Kotzebue to Sitka and share best practices between researchers for monitoring changes, which will enable scientists around the state to respond and adapt to major shifts in the ecosystem Alaskans depend on. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Alaska Energy Desk's Zoe Sobel in Unalaska and KYUK's Adrian Wagner in Bethel. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.